My name is Chris Main, M-A-I-N, and I'm with Brigadier S.E.E. Mores, M-O-R-R-E-S, C.D. Was with the Royal Canadian Artillery for a long time. Date today is 12 June 1979, and we are across from Windsor Park in Oak Bay, Victoria, British Columbia. So wondering, Brigadier Mores, if you could tell us, first of all, when and where you were born, and a little bit about your family background.
Well, I was born in Plymouth in England in September 1907. We were in Plymouth then because my father was in the Royal Navy and that he happened to be stationed there. We weren't originally from Plymouth.
So you were born in Plymouth. Did you go up then to the Navy school then as a kid?
No. We left there when I was about three, and my father came out to Canada in the old Navy when the Canadian Navy was first formed in 1910. Mm-hmm. So we lived in Halifax for a while then.
Did he seconded to the RCN or did he join the RCN?
No, he was seconded, I think, to the RCN. And then he had an accident and retired before the First War, about 1912, I guess, and we lived then in we stayed in Nova Scotia until the First War, and he was called up to Ottawa, but because of his accident, they wouldn't let him go back to sea. So he remained in Ottawa as in Naval Intelligence, and also he was the Naval Aide to the old Duke of Connaught. And we used to spend the summer in Nova Scotia, my mother and I, and the winter in Ottawa, until I went to school in England. I was sent to prep school in beginning of 1917. And I was there in England at prep school for about 3 years.
Which one?
School called Lambrook in Berkshire, near between Bracknell and Ascot, roughly, if you know that part of the world. And then, 1920, we came out to Vancouver Island. And I'm never quite sure why we did, but we did. And then I went to school at Shawnigan Lake School, which was in its infancy then. It only started in 1916, so I grew up there. And then went to RNC. I was going to go to the Naval College in Esquimalt, because I'd always rather intended to go into the Navy. But it was closed in 1922, and I would have gone in 1923. So then I stayed on school for another year because you had to be a year older to get into RNC.
Did you not think of going to England into the public school entry over there?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't want to go back to England. I hadn't really enjoyed it particularly. I think it was wrong for me to go then. To be sent there, I should say, because my family were out here, and I never saw them all through the war, you see, the rest of them.
Any recollections of the First War in England at all, or were you too young?
Oh, I was rather young. The food was awful. It tends to be bad at boarding schools at the best of times, with rationing and the shortages in England then. It was even worse, I think. And it was cold. I remember then.
So when you came back, you had no real desire to go into the RN particularly.
No.
But the RCN looked good, except for the fact that the Royal Naval College of Canada and the Esquimalt was closed, and there wasn't too many openings in the RCN.
No, the Navy was to bay low ebb then, so I went to RNC.
So you spent another year in school, though. This would be, what, the year from 23?
Yes, I went to RNC in September 24.
Now, what school did you, take, like a first-year university type thing, or did you...
Senior matric.
Senior matric.
The entrance to RNC then used to be junior matric. It's now senior matric, of course.
But then so you took your senior matriculation then as opposed to wasting the year?
Yes.
In preparation for RNC in Kingston?
Yes.
Now, we come to the good stuff. So in that September 1924, you went to RNC. Now the first thing I have to know is, what was your first impression of RNC?
Well, it was rather funny in a way, because I got there nearly a week early. What happened was, Ontario, I think, were late getting their school results out, and they couldn't get the candidates selected for RMC in time, and they, at the last minute, they put the opening of the college back a week. But of course, coming from here, I was already on the train. So I had a peaceful 5 days, but it was a bit of a shock when the college proper opened, because they were pretty rough in those days. Somebody who led rather a quiet, sheltered life, it was a bit rough for a while.
Well, didn't your English public school and your Shawnigan Lake training help you survive in that?
Oh, I think it probably did, yes. Yes, because I was used to living away from home. I think that some of the boys who lived at home all their life, it was a bit of a shock.
I was thinking more of the discipline than the...
Because the discipline was very strict. Far stricter then, I think, than it is now. Well, it's a totally different sort now. They live quite a different life.
What was the first thing they did with you? Issue you a uniform, or?
Well, gradually, it took a little while, because uniforms all had to be made. You had to measure how the uniform was made. They should have sort of fatigue clothing, sort of slacks and shirts, that type of thing. You always had to take a plunge in the lake first thing in the morning, which sometimes it's quite chilly.
Okay, let me think now. We're 24. When your uniform did come, what did it consist of, do you recall?
Well, you had a blue uniform, and you had a scarlet uniform. The scarlet uniform you didn't get towards the end of your first year, because they figured you had to be pretty well trained, pretty smart for this life to
wear it.
And it's just the same uniform as they wear at the service colleges today. The blue and the scarlet, just the same.
Now, what markings would you have? Any at all, or would that come with years at the college and promotion within the college itself?
You mean on sort of rank basis?
Yes.
Yes, that would come. We wouldn't have had any for the first two or three years. Maybe in the third year, they had a few lance corporals, the lowest of the low of the commission rank, of the NCO rank. And they would wear one little bar on that collar.
Right.
And then when you became senior, then of course they had all, it might be all of any rank of various sorts. We used to call them under officers. The head, the senior under officer, and then who was the head boy, and then the junior under officers, who had two and that sort of thing.
What about the food?
Food wasn't bad. We were always, I can always remember, certainly my first year, there were two things I wanted. One was food and the other was sleep. Never seemed to get enough of either.
The food was acceptable.
But the food wasn't bad at all, really.
What about rooms, conditions, and your barrack conditions?
Well, we had two buildings. One was called the Stone Frigate, and that was built in 1789, I think, something like that. And the only heating in it were a few coils in the hallways. So that in the winter, it was extremely cold in the rooms. Especially as recruits, you weren't allowed to keep your door open at all, so you really had no heating in the room at all. I remember piling everything onto my bed, all my clothes, dressing gowns, everything I could lay hands on, practically. At night, it was damn chilly. And you had to have your window open at night. And you had a thing called a window orderly who got up at 3 o'clock in the morning and went around shutting all the windows in the flat.
Why would you have to have your window open? Fresh air,
it's good for you.
What about vendors? Did you have many of them then?
Oh.
Was that the right term? Is it?
Yeah, that's as good a term as any. They had a certain amount. Not as much as they had a year or two before, because it was just the year before I went there that Arnold ran away from the college. Remember that chap Arnold, that case? Well, this chap had been pretty well chivvied around, shall we say, by the seniors. And he ran away and created quite a scandal. In fact, it was a big scandal. And he compl- complained to his parents, and his parents complained to the government, and got lawyers, and all sorts of things went on. I don't remember all the details, but of course I wasn't there at the time, or once heard about it, and you can read about it.
Mm-hmm. So things they're more careful.
So they're a little more careful, not quite as rough as they had been. I mean, they were rough enough.
What about pay? Were you given any pay for this?
Oh,
or
no.
Was it costing
your parents? It cost your parents. Not a lot. I've forgotten what the figures were. I mean, it was probably cheap compared to a university education. Going to a university. Because you were fed and housed there.
The uniforms and things would come out of your parents as well?
Uniforms you paid for, yes.
And your tailor then? Would Hawks come out for that?
Or? Oh, no. I was done. All those uniforms were made by the tailor at the college. They were made there, I think, most as far as I can remember they were. We certainly had a tailor at the college who used to measure and fit things and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. It's always a little difficult there because another reason they didn't give you your scarlets when you first got those, you were frequently quite a different size at the end of the first year
first
when you
year.
Arrived.
Yeah.
And you were either boys that had lost fat, well, that time it filled out in the shoulders, etc. And what would have fitted you in September wouldn't fit for the following June.
I thought of it that way. What about entertainment and sports? Or were they one and the same?
No, there were sports of all sorts, I guess, pretty well. Lots of sports during riding, because we had lots of horses then. Not much in the way of entertainment, straight entertainment. You weren't allowed out of the college very much in your first year to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Not like they are now. I didn't even have motor cars and things at the college.
They tell you now that it's a tough life, so.
Yeah. Well, it's very different. I mean, the whole style of living is different now, of course, it was then. I mean, the modern boy of that age knows far more than we ever did about the world, I think, because we didn't have radios, we didn't have TV. I mean, that makes a big difference.
What about the curriculum itself? Do you recall any highlights?
It's I don't know, it was pretty normal,
science.
I suppose. Was
it science?
Yes, it was science-oriented, science and engineering-oriented, much more than arts. We did take English all the time, and French. Not so much in the humanities, but that would be about all, I guess.
History as well, or very limited history?
Limited history, as far as I can remember, quite limited. We had military studies, too, tactics and those sort of things, as well as ordinary.
It would almost be a military science.
That was what it was tending to be. You see, then, when you left the college, you didn't go into the regular army, the regular forces, necessarily. But you did go into the militia, if you didn't go into the non-permanent militia, as it was called.
So you were expected to go there?
Yes.
What if one decided not to?
I don't think anything much would have happened, really. Nearly all did, though.
But nearly all did?
Yeah.
Now, would you be getting a university degree, or was it more of a diploma?
No, they gave a diploma. And then you had, if you wanted a degree, you went to a university for 1 year for BSc, I think, BA, BSc. I think it was 2 years for chemical, mechanical, electrical engineering degrees after you left the college.
So it was a 4 year program or 3 year?
Four.
It was a full 4 year program.
Yeah.
So when you weren't in class, and you weren't trying to get sleep, I gather they had you out in the field running, is that correct, or?
Well, quite a lot of exercise, a lot of games, you know, and practices, and not only did you have to be good enough to play on the college team, but you had inter-squad games and inter-platoon games, so that practically everybody got involved in some sport or another, playing on some games.
Would you compete outside the college itself?
Yes. Oh, yes. You know, they were in the various intercollegiate leagues. Usually, and the football used to be intermediate. We used to play, not senior. But then again, you see, that included all the universities and anyone else, because Queen's that year, as far as I can remember, won the Dominion and won the Grey Cup. They beat Ottawa.
Before it went into professional. Rugby Cup was what it was.
Yeah, before it got to the state it is now, it's really professional.
It would be better the way it was.
I think so. I do myself.
So do I. Now you were not. You didn't receive any pay. Did your parents put up like a stipend for you to draw on, or how did the financing work?
Your parents gave you pocket money. Didn't they? They had to. You didn't need a loan.
So it was up to your parents to provide you with pocket money.
Yes.
What about the type of your colleagues at the college? The type of recruit, was it mostly, well, like in England, the public school entry? It was a very social thing. Was this combined as well in 24? Or did you have a very good cross-section?
I think we had a pretty good cross-section. Well, we had, in my class, going from the top, we had a Molson, now a Senator Molson.
Mm-hmm.
Very wealthy indeed. Well-known Montreal family, and we had the son of the local of a taxi driver in Kingston, also a very nice lad, and everything in between.
And everything in between. So it was a good cross section.
It was a pretty good cross section, I think. It tended to go to the upper level, I would say, because, well, I don't know, I guess you had to pay for university in those days too, and just as much. I mean, there weren't many. Things that you could do that they could get for free. That goes on now.
So your pay was, fuck out, you didn't make a dime until 1928, is that correct?
Didn't make a thing.
Trying to catch up.
Oh, sometimes you make money in the summers.
Now would you be allowed to work in the summers?
Yes, work, do whatever you liked in the summer.
Then you were given, what, 3 months off, 2 months off, 3 months off?
June, well, about the first week in June, July, August, first week in September, you'd go back. So you'd get just about 3 months. And you could do what you liked. Now, nowadays, of course, they have to go and do military training, etc., in the summer. And they may get a month's holiday. But then...
They get a full university degree as well.
Yeah, they do. But I spent 2 summers up at Camp Borden flying aeroplanes. Got tired of that, so I preferred horses to aeroplanes. Still
start, do. Start again now, start again. What summer and what were you doing at Borden? Start again.
Well, I not having anything particular to do in the summer, not being very wealthy at that point.
This would be what, 24, 25?
Yes, this would be the summer of 25. And they had a scheme, they had what they call provisional pilot officer training at Camp Borden, which took people from RMC and universities, etc. And they taught you to fly airplanes. These were, our instructors were all chaps, most of whom had flown in the First War. Pretty wild lot they were, too. One that's crossed just over there now. I remind him of it occasionally, you know, in his 80s to be. Sedate gentleman, but I remind him of some of his antics in 1935 every now and again.
It is the name?
Trim.
Trim.
T-R-I-M. He retired very shortly after that, I think, and got into business in Montreal, made himself a lot of money. However, they used to have this training program just for the summer, and then I went to that for a couple of years.
Yeah, what kind of airplanes did they have?
We had the old Avro 504K, it was a Toyota rotary engine. It was quite a thing. suppose its landing speed was about 40 or 45. And top speed about 70, I guess.
Well, what was your, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, what was Camp Borden like in 1925, impression-wise?
It was a wartime camp still. All wartime buildings. First of all,
nothing's been changed there.
Nothing much has been changed, I don't think.
Very many people walking around, or?
Yeah, they had quite a lot of people there. I can't remember who they all were now. It was the Air Force, sort of main Air Force station of the RCAF then.
Mm-hmm.
So they had at least a group captain in command of the place.
You got into this old Avro, and they give you elementary flying training, ground
yes.
school,
oh,
all that
yes.
type of thing.
Yes, yes. They taught rigging and maintenance and
reheat roll or
everything, and all about the CC gear so that you could fire and
school gear or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Was it dehedral? You got to know about dehedral.
Oh, yes, yes. Dehedral angles.
Super. So then eventually got behind the stick, I guess.
Yes. Then I flew one into the ground one day. That didn't do me any harm. The plane a lot of harm. It didn't do me any harm.
What about equipment? We're in a quite an austerity program in the true sense, but there wasn't that much money available.
No, there wasn't much. There wasn't much equipment either.
Mostly first war
planes. Yeah.
Just mostly just first war materials.
Yeah,
everything was
pretty
well.
Yeah, I think so.
Now you say you didn't like the plane.
No, I didn't. I decided I really didn't want to go into the Air Force.
Would you have had to switch into the force, or did the, I'm just trying to think, the Army have its, sort of its...
Oh, well, you could go into anything from RMC. When you graduate
mm-hmm.
from RMC, you could go into the Air Force, you could go into the Army.
The Air Force
all
didn't
the
do much for you.
We had people from my year, we graduated 35 in my class, that was all. And we had some into the Army, some into the Air Force, some into the RCMP, and one into the Navy, RN. And he left after 2 years and went over to the RN, joined them.
Flying, I gather, wasn't for you, is that correct?
No, it wasn't. I decided to be interested.
You liked horses?
I was very fond of horses, I liked riding. And of course, when I left RMC and joined the RCHA, of course, they were still horsed.
They have their musical drive, I guess.
Oh, yes, mm-hmm, very much so.
The drive business, it was a drive.
Yes, they had the drive. That was big. It would be very exciting.
Now, I gather you would be based on the King's Troop. Well, they call it that now, the RHA in England.
The drive, you mean, or...?
Well, I gather pretty much everything would be based on the English system. Is that correct?
Yes, I would say it was
and
correct.
The uniform would be...
Yeah, the uniform was the same.
Now, we're talking about a deluxe... Well, first of all, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we are, but...
Number one, you graduated, or received your diploma, whatever you want to call it, 1928.
Yeah.
The options open to you were RCAF, because of your training, flight training, pilot training. The RN, which you didn't really want any part of. Do you have any real desire to go back into RCN now? Because in 28 they were opening up the doors again in the RCN.
Yes, but I don't know. I didn't at that point.
No, you were like horses too much in the ground.
Yeah, I was getting pretty well.
Now, did you choose the... You wanted the regular force as opposed to a militia.
Yeah.
And any particular reason for that other than...
I don't know. I sort of thought I would like the life.
Yeah.
And find it interesting and enjoyable.
Now, would you join a specific regiment at this time?
Yes.
You just wouldn't walk in and join. You would go after a specific regiment.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, you would.
Now, why the RCHA?
Well, because it was big, and I thought the chances probably were better in it. And I knew quite a few of the people in the regiment by this time. And I just thought it would be, I was interested in having the mechanical things as well as the horses and the normal military life, so to speak.
No, you weren't taken by that uniform though, were you?
No. The other people had just as good uniform.
Now the uniform, which is my old bag, now you would have what, the hat with the stripe in it, and I'm trying to think, it's almost like a bearskin, I guess, is it?
Oh, the busby.
Yeah, it's a busby.
Yeah, but we didn't wear that.
Only on musical drives and...
Yeah, only on musical drives.
You get married in?
You got married in, yes.
Well,
yeah. I can tell you that.
Take a pause, it's on the air. Now, fitting of that dress uniform, I gather, would be Hawks and the Boys, is that correct? From London, or with the maker in town still?
That full dress?
Yes.
No.
Or did you just...
We borrowed it. We had about... There were about five or six of them in the regiment, I think, that they were pre-war, really, because it was never worn regularly after the first war.
Now, this would be with the busby and lots of braid across the front. And
see, the officer's one then cost about $1,200, I believe.
Then?
So nobody could afford it.
No simple thing is going to walk in and...
Lord, that really happened. You had to have enough clothes as it was.
Well, what about getting... Now, you joined the RCHA. You'd be... Would you be second lieutenant then?
No, when you...
Full lieutenant.
You were full lieutenant if you graduated from RMC.
Second
lieutenant, yeah, in fair.
But, so you'd be a full lieutenant, you would be expected to look after, well, you've been looking after your own kit and things, but you'd be expected to buy it all now.
Yes.
Your parents would be out of the way,
yeah.
Financially speaking. I guess the first thing is how do you get fitted out? Do you just hit the tailors and...
Yeah, well, Hawks, right, was our regimental tailor, and he used to send a man out here
from London.
At least once a year from London, and he'd measure and take orders, etc., and make the uniforms and send them out to him.
So I guess they had a list of what you would need, is that correct?
Yeah, well, you could order pretty well what you wanted, when you knew what you had to have. You had to have khaki and blue, and mess kit.
Now, what mess kit would you be wearing, the red jackets with the...
No, ours was blue with the red facing.
So it would be blue with the red facing and then with the stripe down the side of the
stripe down the side of it, yeah.
And then you'd be wearing your pips on the shoulder, or would you have the bar?
No, they're on the shoulder.
Or on the shoulder, so you'd have your pips on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Both of them. Now... I gather we got you outfitted, it's 1928, you're in the RCHA with, I guess, a lot of pride and a lot of regimental tradition. What was regiment life like, I guess, I'm trying to get at, would you have to be dressed for dinners four to five times a week type of thing?
Yes, you led it. Although they didn't have any money, our pay was $4 a day, which really wasn't a lot. Especially when you had to pay mess dues and you had to buy all this uniform, etc. So you don't have too much money. But you lived very comfortably. I mean, I had a batman. I never did anything with my clothes. He tied the shoes and pressed the clothes and laid them out. I'd say, I'll need a suit tonight, or I'm dining in, and mess kit would all be laid out for me and boots would all be polished.
This is a lieutenant.
This is a lieutenant. And I had a groom and a couple of horses. No, I'd say I shall now go for a ride. I'd have my horse at the door at 9 o'clock, and my groom would arrive with the horse all ready for you. So if you led a different life nowadays, they don't do that now.
No.
And we'd, in mess, you'd have to dress for dinner four times a week normally. And missed
four
it.
Four times a week and missed it.
Yeah, and had a full formal dinner, even if there are only two or three of you in, which there might be. Wednesday afternoon was considered a sporting afternoon, so you didn't dress for dinner on Wednesday night. So you come in from, might be late coming in from sports, so you just had a so-called supper, and on Saturday and Sunday the same.
Would it be a guest night?
Thursday was always a guest night, and the band would be there on Thursday night to play for dinner. And once a month they had a big guest night and everybody dined in, all the married up people and everyone all dined in. And again, of course, the band was there and that was usually quite...
Did you have a dance as well? Or?
No. No, hardly ever had... I think... New Year's Eve was about the only time we had a dance in the Met.
No, I'm thinking of guest night now, did you invite lady friends?
No, females at all.
No,
they were never allowed in the mess. No.
Just strictly men.
Yeah.
And what type of people would be invited in, I guess, is what I'm asking. What local dignitaries?
Oh, local friends. I mean, you'd ask your own friends in. Occasionally there might be the local dignitaries, members of parliament, or there might be visiting people from Ottawa or what have you, or other regiments, people around about, or you might ask one of your pals, say, on the staff at IMC, or, that sort of thing, or your own pals that you played badminton with, or what have you.
What about regimental silver and things like that? I gather the RCHA would have its fair share.
We had a lot, yes. And what's happened to it all now, I don't really know. I think probably most of it's a trauma.
Now, would you have like a lot of silver chairs, tables?
Yes, all the furniture was owned by the mess, by the officers themselves. None of it was government supply.
The only thing government supply would be what, the building?
The building, yes.
And was it a costly mess, or average, or...?
I would think it was fairly costly. We used to pay $1 a day for messing. I think nowadays they don't pay much more than that. So you can see that it was pretty good.
Making four, yeah.
It was pretty good in those days.
If you're only making $4 a day, though, you're still putting $1, that's a quarter.
It's
25 cents on the dollar is going out immediately for mess.
Yeah.
And then you would be what? And that would cover everything, or would your liquor and that be on top of that?
Oh, your liquor would be on top of that.
Cigars
and cigarettes and everything will be on top of that. That'd be just straight food.
So would you be kept to a, like midshipmen or whatever were kept to so much they could spend so much on liquor and cigarettes per?
No, we weren't actually limited, but the CO kept an eye on it.
Your mess bill was?
Yeah, it was always watched. Because there was a big sheet that was up in the hallway, which showed everybody and exactly what they'd bought, what they had to drink, etc. Cost on it, so the CO would just come look at it and say, "You're spending too much money on drink, stop it."
That'd be the end of it.
That'd be that.
I'm trying to think, would anybody be fired out of the mess, I guess, is what I'm thinking.
Nobody was in my day.
Ungentlemanly conduct, I guess, would be the...
Yeah, well, it'd have to be pretty bad if to
be pretty ungentlemanly.
Because usually you get a good rocket from the CO if you were doing things he didn't approve.
Now, how would the, I guess, the civilian relations with the RCHA at this time? Was it good relations?
I think it was good, yes. We had lots of friends in the town that we used to see. And
now you'd be based out of where?
We were in Kingston.
Kingston's as well.
Yes, at Fort Frontenac, which is now the National Defense College, where we used to, the old tabletop barracks they were. Yeah.
That was your regimental headquarters then?
Yes. Yeah.
Very nice. What what happens in the, we have the end of Mackenzie King in 28. Well, before we get into political, what kind of courses did you go on right away? I gather there'd be specific course training for the artillery. What were your duties?
Well, we had one course called the Artillery Staff Course that was run in Halifax and Bitter War with a short period in Quebec at the Dominion Arsenal to see how things were manufactured. That took the best part of a year. And that was the only Canadian course we had. The rest of the courses were all in England. There's what's called the Gunnery Staff Course, which we'd go on later, and usually two at a time. And then you had the Ordinary Staff College and the advanced classes and those sort of things.
Mm-hmm. What was your job in, though, with the RCHA? Were you driving a horse or
in
the gun crew? Or
no, I was a section commander, which nowadays would be called a troop commander.
Mm-hmm.
There you had a battery and you had two sections, the left section and the right section.
Of a battery?
Of a battery.
Now, how many guns in a battery at this particular time? 16?
Four in the battery. Two. There were only the two sections, you see, or which would, nowadays would be two troops.
And let's just get this one straight then.
There were four guns in a section, I'm sorry.
Four guns in a section,
yeah.
Eight guns in a battery,
and
what?
Am I right? No, I'm not right. No, we only had two guns in the section then. We only had four guns in the battery.
Okay, there's two guns in a section, four guns in a battery, and what, four batteries to the regiment?
Well, the organization was different. We didn't have regiments then, we had brigades. And in Kingston, we had two batteries, two field batteries, and a medium battery.
Mm-hmm.
In Winnipeg, there was just one field battery, and that's all we had. And then the coast defense batteries on here and in Halifax.
And that would come under the artillery as well, of course, the
yes.
Examination guns.
Yeah, they were all part of the artillery.
And your particular task at this time?
I was a section commander.
And your duties would be to do what?
Well,
make sure they fired right here.
yeah, and see if they were trained and the horses were trained. You'd get remounts in, you know, and they'd have to be trained both for riding and for draft to pull the guns. The men had to be trained, the gun layers had to be responsible for all that, and for looking after the men.
What kind of guns did you have?
18-pounders.
First war?
Yeah.
Nothing new?
No, nothing new.
What happens during the Depression, I guess, is what I got to come to. We have R.B. Bennett in. We have the Depression starting with King, then R.B. Bennett comes in.
Well, we were starting to be mechanized, and we got towing trucks, Leylands from England, and Crosley's smaller vehicles for the infantry staff and so on. And as soon as the government changed, they were just starting to build a garage to put these things in. As soon as the government changed, they stopped it. See, I guess it was Bennett, his lot, the Depression and all. And so all these great vehicles sat out on the square all winter, which annoyed us intensely because they were very difficult to start. You'd work hard and get one going, and then it would pull another, and you'd have to pull them all, tow them all around to get them all started again. And we thought this was remarkably stupid to leave these very expensive vehicles just sitting about in the snow and the ice all winter instead of building the garage. And then we were very short of ammunition. The militia batteries that used to come, we used to go to Petawar for the summer, 3 months. It wasn't a permanent station then as it is now for the militia training. And we were allowed, I think it was 5 rounds per battery. And they were only allowed to bring about 25% of their personnel to camp, and they'd make composite batteries from 4 to 6 militia batteries. So it was a very unsatisfactory sort of method of training.
Five rounds?
Yeah.
Sighting in a gun would take more than 5 rounds.
Well, you get 4 batteries in together, you see, so that would give you 20 rounds. You could fire about one series, and that's all you could do with it. And we had very little for our own training for 2 or 3 years there.
What about the, this is more an infantry's job, I guess, but what about the, there was a great march of the unemployed that was broken up by militia more than anything else. But then there was also camps set up for men by the army.
Ah, yes.
Now, were you involved with any of this?
Well, I was in Winnipeg then. I was in C Battery. This was late.
Well, will you be affiliated with the PPCLI there? Or what?
No, no. The RCHA had a battery and an artillery school there.
So you didn't have to affiliate with anyone else?
No. We were there. The PPCLI were there and the LSH were there. Oh, and we had a garrison mess. Which is
a I see. So more of a garrison in Winnipeg than anything else.
Yeah. But we all went our separate ways for our own training purposes. And I didn't ever have anything much to do with the relief camps, as they were called. There was one at Shiloh.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was at Shiloh, or was it Hughes? Anyway, they're just adjacent, just next door to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I remember was we got some excellent cheese, because they wouldn't eat it. Because it had blue in it, and they thought it was bad. They had good cheddar cheese. And we got an accountant in the mess, one of the chaps from the relief camp. We needed an accountant, so we took one of these fellows, and he then absconded with all the money he could get his hands on, and left the accountant in the most awful mess.
How were civilian-military relations now, I wonder? I guess is what I'm trying to get at. With you, with a government job, in other words, and all these people unemployed, was there any animosity? Or?
I don't think so. I don't remember any at all.
You stayed
because
yourself,
I think they realized that we were trying to do what we could for them. Trying to help them and that sort of thing. There was nothing, wasn't our fault that there was a depression on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was probably the feeling with the people in the relief camps. Because I think the soldiery did try and be nice to them as much as they could.
What about the local citizens?
Yeah, we had good relations with the local citizens.
No difficulty there.
No difficulty there.
Did you take a cut in pay at this time? I know the militia.
Yeah, we did, yes. I think a 10% cut they did. Got to remember whether we ever got it back or not, now that I come to think of it. I guess we must have.
How'd you feel about that? Were your mess dues, that's the question, were your mess dues cut by 10%?
No, they weren't. Nothing else was.
That's what I was afraid of.
Just the pay.
Is there a change in 35 at all? 36, 37, and here, this is where the change comes, new materials, new equipment.
Yes, I went over to England in 37. We hadn't had any new equipment much. We hadn't got any out west anyway. And they were putting in a lot of coast defense stuff. We hadn't got the 25-pounder yet, so I think when I first saw the 25-pounder, I guess it was in England. I went over to the Military College of Science in 1937 to take what they call the advanced class, which was a 2.5-year course.
You'd be, what, a captain at this time?
I was just a captain, yes.
You'd just been promoted?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd been a captain for about 3 or 4 years, I guess, by this time, yes. Because I came to Winnipeg in 34 and I was a captain then. That was my job, I was a battery captain. And the captain's responsible for the administration, more or less, of the unit. Yes, I was. Yes, I'd been a captain for several years.
So you then went back to England. So you went to England in 37 as a captain. Any great changes there from your boyhood days?
Well, I'd been over on the gunnery staff course a few years before that. I guess I finished that in 34. I came back 1933-34, that was a year's course over in England. I spent a year there then. And that covered field, ACAC, and coast artillery. And ended up with a week at the Naval School of Gunnery at Whale Island, see how the Navy did the fired things.
Great differences?
Well, yes, there is a considerable difference because they're firing from a moving platform all the time, which we're not. We fire from a fixed platform. We can use long base range fighting systems. You know, I mean, have an observation point 5 miles away and another one to get your cross bearings all the time, and you feed them into machines that automatically churn out range and bearing from, you know, a given particular phase and feed that information to the guns. Because they have to allow for their own course and speed, so they have to have an additional device in their machine. They're very good drinking gin, we found, though.
Yes.
Of course, for us, it was the last week of the course. All the British knew where they were going and everything else, so it was really rather just fun more than anything. We had great games with the Navy and
walking around.
Walking around, looking to see what there was to be seen.
Your course, I gathered the English course, so the Army course over there was first class, is that correct?
It was good, yes. Yeah, they're good courses.
Top equipment as well?
Yeah. So all the latest that they had in the way of equipment.
Well, was there any grumbling, I guess, back in the mess, the regiment, about this government not giving us equipment to do our job?
Yes, there was, I suppose, but I don't think... I think there's always a certain amount of grumbling. I'm not sure it's not a healthy thing. If there's no grumbling, you think people obviously aren't taking enough interest in what's going on. There must be grumbling. A certain amount, I mean, you know, it can be overdone, but you always want to get something new. Especially if you hear of it, or if you think of it yourself even, you think, well, why can't we have a gun that does so-and-so, or an instrument that does so-and-so?
Mm-hmm.
And this is good, because it does lead to improvements.
Now, your course is finished, what, in 38 or the end of 37?
No, it didn't finish till Christmas 39, after the war was started.
So you were still on course when the war had started?
And that was the only course they kept on. All the other courses they closed, all the staff college and those sort of things, they stopped. But this course they kept going. They cut it short by 3 months, but they kept it going for at least, well, until after Christmas.
Now, have the Canadians forgotten about you, or...?
No, they haven't.
Now, wouldn't you be on course with Ross?
No, not then. He was on exchange. He
was on exchange.
Yeah.
I see, because he was over there as well,
yes.
39 after the war.
Yeah, he was, and he went over to France with his...
Dunkirk, the whole nine yards.
And chased a whole lot of pigs back or something.
Yeah. Now, I'm just trying to get this right now, you're in London. Well, you'd be right there through, what, the Munich crisis?
Yes, we were in Woolwich.
Well, what was the impression? Was there a great change in England at this time? Or what was it like? Anything you can describe?
Well, the time of the Munich crisis, they started building shelters and that sort of thing. Army-wise, we felt, well, this is coming. Why the hell can't we get more equipment? And they did start. Well, they had started actually before the Munich crisis. They were beginning to see that they've got to re-equip their army generally and get more material. And that began to grow quite a lot. And after the Munich crisis, nobody believed Mr. Chamberlain. He said peace in our time, etc., etc. At least the army services certainly didn't.
So you were gearing up for war.
They were gearing up then. And we were beginning, they were just starting the radar things around about...
The radar control gun type?
No, the early warning.